Good evening, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of The Bog right here on Dave Martell YouTube channel. Sorry for being a little bit late, having some technical difficulties. So if we have some internet connectivity problems throughout the show, that's why. I don't know what's going on. The world's going crazy. We got everybody's like having tech issues all over the place. So who knows what's going on. But anyway, we are here trudging along with a very interesting topic tonight. We're going to talk about transhumanism from the view of heathenry. But before we get started, we got to do our plugs, man. Patreon.com/TheBog. You like The Bog, you support The Bog, you want to see The Bog keep their lights on, go to Patreon.com/TheBog and sign up. There's a tier for everybody, $5, all the way up to $50. You can get a mug, you can get a sticker. Most importantly, you can get RSS feed to get audio of every single show that we do to listen to on your commutes, in your car, at the gym, or at work. That is Patreon.com/TheBog. Go check it out. If you want to support us another way, make sure you go to shop.spreadshirt.com/BogShop and get yourself some sweet Bog merch. Winter is here! Get yourself a sweet Bog hoodie. Great stuff. Bog beanies, Bog everything. Go check it out. We got all kinds of designs over there. Well, we got two designs over there. But anyway, check it out. Shop.spreadshirt.com/BogShop. Help us keep the lights on. Or you can check out one of our buddies over at Facebook.com/IronAgeJodish, our buddy Neil John. The guy's brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. He does this authentic Vedic astrology. Really cool stuff. If you decide to get a reading, make sure to tell him Big Dave sent you over to that Facebook.com/IronAgeJodish. Guys, get your, if you don't have a copy already, make sure you go get your copy of the Bizarre Archives, Weird Tales of Monsters, Magic, and Machines over there at thebizarrearchives.com, a project by yours truly, a compilation of short stories in science fiction, sword and sorcery, and cosmic horror genres by our guys that are like us, amateur, aspiring authors. We got dozens of five-star reviews. I haven't even gotten a four-star review yet. All five-star reviews, hundreds of copies sold around the world, and we have issue 2 coming out very, very soon. So make sure to go get your version of Bizarre Archives issue 1 over at Amazon or Books a Million if you hate Amazon. So, Andre, Tristan, what's going on, fellas?
Oh, nothing much for me, Dave. I'm pretty good, though.
Excellent. Excellent.
I'm pretty good myself. Not much going on here either, though.
Wonderful. So tonight we are going to talk about transhumanism, right? We're going to talk about, well, not just transhumanism. We are going to talk about the heathen view of transhumanism and have a little bit of a discussion, a little bit of a debate about it, and hopefully come to a consensus on transhumanism and how we should feel about it. And kind of me and Tristan are on a little bit, we're not on complete opposite sides of the spectrum. However, we are, Tristan's a little bit more accepting of technology, whereas me, I am kind of a Luddite, and I think science is gay, and I hate computers, and I'm mad at computers. So I'm one of them Luddite kind of guys, sort of. So we are going to have a discussion between the two and kind of come to a synthesis. Was that who was that guy? Hegel, the Hegelian synthesis or whatever. I don't even know if I know.
Hegelian dialectics.
About. Yeah, whatever that is. We're not. I don't know. It sounds kind of sciencey, so I don't know if I want to do that. But we're going to talk about it tonight. So, Mr. Andre, take it away.
Well, to begin with, I guess we can ask you then, Dave, as a matter of definition, what do you define as transhumanism? What is transhumanism for you?
Okay, so there's actually several different camps of what people consider transhumanism to be. There's probably some different definitions out there. However, the one that I would fall back on that I think would encompass all of it and be probably the most simplistic platform to start from would be, I consider transhumanism to be mankind's next evolutionary leap as brought about by technology instead of habituation. It's pretty much when technology outpaces biology and the next stage of human evolution is brought about by technology via man's own hand. Tristan might have a little bit of a different definition.
What about you, Tristan?
Right. I would say that transhumanism is any process that increases or enhances the human body or mind through artificial means, whether that's a replacement of any sort of biological organs or limbs with cybernetic parts or through genetic manipulation to produce superior humans. So effectively, it's the artificial manipulation of humanity.
Yeah, I would say that to say that it's an improvement is speculative and subjective.
So I suppose you could argue that whether or not something improves the human condition is subjective, but the goal of a transhumanist perspective is improvement. No one wants to deliberately degrade the human condition. At least in the sense of it being transhumanism.
Yeah.
People who do want to deliberately degrade the human condition through punitive measures is, I think, an entirely different subject.
Yeah. So let's, Mr. Andre, you're kind of the, you take it away here.
So let's, I guess we can start in this case with a pretty big one. And that is, where do you feel the limits of transhumanism within our faith is allowed? Where does the limit end?
The limits of transhumanism within our faith, and when is it allowed? This comes down to the question of, so this really is a tough question, because this goes back to what is transhumanism, what counts as transhumanism. By Tristan's definition, pretty much anything that so-called improves the basic material function of the human body by artificial means is transhumanism. So, but within his definition, this also includes things like eyeglasses or screws in your knees when you break your knee, or contact lenses, or, you know, just
it
about
would indeed.
Yeah, so that would include anything like that. Now, when we talk about transhumanism, I disagree with Tristan's definition. I do, because I don't think that those things are profound enough to push humanity into the next stage of evolution. Transhumanism means to transition from human into the next thing, right? Whatever that may be, leaving behind humanity. Eyeglasses, while we could get into the minutia of why eyeglasses have been detrimental to us as a species over long periods of time, so let's just throw it out there, because of the advent of eyeglasses, the people that have inferior eyesight, me being one of them, are no longer cast out of the gene pool. There is obviously a time where if you couldn't see, you couldn't hunt, you couldn't breed, you weren't selected, therefore your genes were nixed. Nowadays, that doesn't matter at all, because we have eyeglasses and everything like that. So what this has done is this has created more people with eye dysfunction, and this creates a mutated genetic load to get passed on and create more children with messed up eyes, which creates more children with even worse things like glaucoma and more eye-related problems. So this is what eyeglasses has caused. That is the argument against the advent of eyeglasses, and saying that, because there's some people that go really, really far with it, and they say that any sort of technology from the dawn of time, there's people that say the time that the first ape man sharpened a stick was when transhumanism started. I wouldn't go that far. I actually disagree with this position, and I actually disagree.
It was all downhill after ideas.
Yeah, yeah. There's people that argue that, though. There's people that argue that. There's people that argue that farming and agriculture was where mankind went downhill. There's people that make those arguments. I don't make those arguments. My argument is that, yes, the eyeglasses probably, we do see an objective negative result from the continuous use of eyeglasses and other body improvements, archaic body improvements over time. However, these things are not profound enough to propel mankind into his next supposed stage of evolution. So when it comes down to what is the limits of transhumanism within our faith and when is it allowed? I argue that the limits of transhumanism, this is probably going to be my argument for half of these questions, but my argument for against transhumanism when it comes to the heathen worldview is any sort of technology or augmentation that perverts, changes the human form in any sort of significant way, pushing him away from being human, period. So something like uploading your consciousness into a hard drive, like I don't even think that's possible, but stuff like that you know, extreme cybernetic augmentations, things of this nature that kind of are a mockery of the human form, because it does say in Voluspa that our form is a gift from the gods. It says, you know, hair, blood, and good complexion, godly complexion, laulati litrgova. These are what's given to us by the gods themselves. So to drastically modify that, to me, is to go against the gods and their gifts.
So, very amusingly, my limit doesn't actually differ from Dave's very much. So unfortunately, we might not have a huge disagreement. We might need to get into some specific here. But my limit is effectively that so long as it doesn't fundamentally change the nature of man, but merely improves upon already existing qualities we possess, then it's fine. But the moment that it starts to change the nature of humanity, to give us things that are inhuman, to change how we interact fundamentally as humanity, it comes revoked after that. All right, can you hear me now?
Yeah, I can hear you. You did the thing where you cut out and then you came back as Alvin and the Chipmunks.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Sorry about that, guys. My internet's being a little screwy right now, so that might happen every now and then. Yeah. But anyway, what was the last thing you guys heard from me?
Was effectively you just outlining that anything that changes the human form in any sort of significant way.
Right. Anything that changes the nature of man. I wouldn't say it's the human form necessarily, though that is also part of the nature of man.
Now,
but that would also encompass things like our mental processes, emotions, that sort of thing.
So would you say something like taking antidepressants would be against it?
I do not think that taking antidepressants is against that, because they generally just... They give us hormones that are already present in our bodies at levels that are effectively normal. It's for someone who needs to be normalized in that sense, right? But I would oppose something that, for instance, medically prevented people from getting sad, because being sad is a part of the human condition itself.
So some sort of gene editing that eliminated depression.
Right, I would be against that.
Yeah, of course.
Well, you know, actually, that makes... Because we have to define here what we mean by depression. Because if we define depression as just being sad, then no, people need the ability to be sad. But if we define depression as effectively being out of, like, a hormonal imbalance, then I think it's fine to correct that imbalance towards what is our natural state.
So how would, for instance, both of you then see the position of, I guess, the ultimate goal of some transhumanists, philosophers and authors to eradicate sickness altogether and ultimately cure death to achieve immortality?
I am in favor of curing any sort of sickness or disease or even immortality.
You're in favor of that?
I am absolutely in favor of that.
I am staunchly against that, to the point that I find anybody that advocates for human immortality to be, like, teaching something that's really, really dangerous and something that I find, spiritually offensive, actually. Because I believe
okay,
that...
Okay, well, how about this? Transhumanist attainment of immortality is present within the lore. The gods take artificial substances which create immortality. They are functionally and naturally mortal.
But that's the gods.
No, but there's no commandment forbidding it for humans. You can't just say that the gods can do this, but there's no good reason why we shouldn't.
But there's many, many things the gods do that we use the argument that we say, well, that's for the gods to do, that's not for us.
Yes, but that comes about through the idea that they have already told us you should do this, and then, you know, people have the argument, well, the gods did this, so it's okay for me to break that as well. We don't have a commandment that humans should have to die.
But there is a huge emphasis on dying and the life cycle and the necessity.
Well, sure, because it is very relevant to humans' life. But it doesn't always have to be. And for instance, if immortality does not necessarily mean any sort of like absolute fixed permanent immortality. We're talking about something closer to like removing the process of aging. You're theoretically still able to die, even if you couldn't die from like old age or something.
No, I know what you're talking. You're not saying to make people impervious from like getting hit by a car or getting a rock fall on them. You're saying to slow the process of aging.
I mean, I would be in favor of even eliminating the process of aging, but I think it's fundamentally impossible to just prevent all sources of damage. So humans will technically be more in that sense.
So effectively, in our genetic code is essentially a clock, right? We have stopwatch that actually triggers your body to begin degrading over time. That's you know, part of the reason that women live longer than men. Obviously, there are other factors, but they can eliminate this. This is something that can happen. Now, this is where we get into the idea of immortality. Let's not be ridiculous with it. Let's say that the process of genetic engineering gives man another, let's say, 80 years, right? It tacks 80 years onto your lifespan. How do we know that the human mind is capable of comprehending a lifespan that long? How do we know that things aren't going to start getting weird? People aren't going to start developing more problems, more mental problems from living that long? How do we know that's not going to mess up, that's not going to create population problems? Or how do we know that doesn't mess up the cycle of the afterlife, which the gods are psychopomps? They're involved with the cycle of the afterlife. They have designed us to have a specific lifespan that is effective for us, that works for us. It is part of the harmony of nature. So how do we know that creating, you know, I don't really like the word immortality because it effectively means that you're never going to die of old age. If they eliminate the immortality gene, your point that you're like still alive and you're still alert, but your body is effectively just like a broken, puddled mess. So that's a whole other slippery slope that, you know, I don't know if you guys want to get into, but that's effectively my argument, is that the gods have created us to have the lifespans that we do because this is a lifespan that we can comprehend with our minds. And when, as Tristan described earlier, which he would agree with, that the augmentation of the natural process of the human mind does start to go against our faith.
Yeah. So my main criticism of this is that you're using a formula of what is effectively negative theology here, that any possibility that could bring about a negative result must therefore be forbidden. But that doesn't really work, Dave, because there are lots of things that we do that are not necessarily spoken about in the religious faith. For instance, the laws have nothing to say about whether or not you should or should not drive a car. The gods don't drive cars. Perhaps driving a car somehow creates an issue with how humans comprehend motive, space, and time, perceptions, and everything of that sort, their relationship with each other. Right, so then we should therefore ban all cars.
No, well, what I'm getting at here is...
Well, it's the same thing, isn't
it? It's not, but what I'm saying
is
that driving a car is something very minor. You know what I mean? It's the same as we're talking about eyeglasses and everything like that.
It could... No, no. It could be that driving a car changes the way humanity perceives time and distance. Correct?
Yeah, it could.
So isn't that fundamentally the same thing as how humanity might be able to process, say, time and their relationship with others if we live much longer?
So if you have herpes, why do you also want to get AIDS?
Right. So the issue I'm saying here, Dave, is that once you introduce a platform of negative theology where anything that isn't explicitly allowed is forbidden, you create really ridiculous structures like this where everything, almost everything, becomes forbidden.
But that's not what I'm getting at.
We can't base our theological rules on hypothetical ideas about what if it was maybe bad.
So what I'm going with here is that eliminating the aging process as your definition of what is against folk faith, as far as from the transhumanist point of view, that eliminating the aging process does indeed fundamentally change the human form and the function of humanity.
I mean, does it though? Because we've increased our lifespan by natural means throughout all of human history. Our lifespan today is not going to be the same as our ancestors' lifespan 500 years ago.
Well, I would actually disagree with this. I would say that if you look at the data, let's look at medieval lifespans, for example. Everybody always says, well, the average person died at 30 years old or something like that. Well, that's not all the way true. What they're doing is they're factoring in things like, you know, infant mortality, the death of young people, you know, all of these other kinds of things that aren't contributing to the death from old age. People that lived their full lifespan throughout most of history have had the same lifespan that we have now. It hasn't changed.
Well, except that it's not just the same lifespan we have now. It's closer to something like 60 or maybe 70 at the latest. While people's lifespan now are regularly hitting the late 80s, early 90s, even into the hundreds.
I disagree.
I don't see how you disagree, Dave.
I disagree in that changing your lifespan fundamentally changes what humanity is. Now, what you're talking about here is kind of like an indirect. We didn't come out with the goal of giving ourselves longer lifespans. Let's go with the idea that yes, our lifespans are longer. Why are they longer? They're longer because because diets are improved, but they're not. You know, whatever. But diets are improved. Let's say that medicine has improved. Let's say that there are just many factors that have gone into expanding our lifespan, right? That is not us on the quest for immortality. These are two completely different objectives here, and they should be looked at as something different.
I would recognize that extending the lifespan is not necessarily the same thing as claiming immortality. But I think this also just goes back to the fundamental question of whether or not claiming immortality is actually a forbidden function at all. I don't think it is. I mean, we could say that the reason humans are mortal is because we are built like the gods. We are like them in body and somewhat in mind. All right.
Yeah.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, I can hear you. So, effectively...
Okay. Let me finish up what I was saying, that we are somewhat... we are built like the gods in body and mind. This is their gift to us. We are akin to them in this way. Mm-hmm. The gods themselves are fundamentally mortal, and they all take an artificial method to prolong their lives indefinitely. Except for instance, you know, death by trauma, effectively. They can be murdered, they can be killed in battle, but they can't die from aging. They consider aging to be deleterious to themselves. There's an entire myth about when this artificial means was stolen from them and they all aged. Therefore, humans taking a similar type of thing to extend our lifespan cannot be said to be forbidden, because it's something that the gods, who also had a similar issue as we do, themselves also take. We just lack this this substance. We lack the apples of Ethan.
So you agreed just a minute ago that this would possibly fundamentally change the form of man?
No, I don't think it does. Because it would only fundamentally change the form of man if you literally could not die. But as we've established, dying from aging is just one possible method of death. You could still fall in battle or through trauma or accident or something, even end your own life if it really was necessary. People would still gradually die.
All right, so we're coming up on a half hour. We should probably move on to some of these other topics before we split hairs on this one for another half hour.
It was a good question, though.
Yeah, great question. Great discussion.
So next one up, it could probably be a very short one here, but do you two then make a distinction between a biological and a mechanical transhumanist's device, say, for instance, a prosthetic or an organ transplant, or alternative something more radical, such as replacing, say, the eyes of a human with a healthier set of genetically constructed eyes that are perfect in vision and sight, curing essentially any sort of weak-sightedness, removing that entirely from the gene pool, or replacing it with mechanical parts that function more like a camera lens. Tristan, what's your take on this?
So I do think there is actually a very clear difference between biological manipulation and robotic manipulation. I don't think it's acceptable to replace components of the body, as in like your arm or something, that is normally perfectly healthy with a robotic machine interface. Though I do think that it's fine to replace it if that part of the body is already missing or damaged in some way, because at that point it's already not functioning as it should be. I do think that biological manipulation is much more acceptable altogether, because humans already biologically manipulate ourselves through the selection of genes. Just increasing the speed and efficacy in which we can do that is not necessarily a huge leap.
What's your response to that, Dave?
Okay, so the first part I agree with Tristan on. To mechanically augment your body is a perfectly functioning body is not good, right? That's fundamentally changing the human form. You know, that's not what you're talking about as far as, say, like getting an eye transplant, or perhaps they have some of these like mechanical arms, or like say a guy that gets his hand cut off or blown off in a war and he gets like a hook or a prosthetic. These are prosthesis. Our ancestors had prosthesis. They had crutches. They had little, you know, they had things that they used to aid people that were maimed or hurt or whatever. Like, prosthesis while both of these things are mechanical, prosthesis and let's say like a cyborg arm, these things are both mechanical. I do think that there is a meaningful distinction between them. Now, as far as a biological... Tristan, can you rehash what you said about biological?
Right. So I think there's a distinction between the robotic and the biological, and that's mostly because humans already biologically manipulate ourselves through natural means.
So yeah. I also think, as I previously stated, between prosthesis and cybernetics, I think that there is a meaningful difference between natural selection or organic eugenics, I guess you could say, and full-on genetic editing. Going and meeting your girlfriend for the first time and seeing if her family are healthy and tall and strong and smart, and then using that information to breed with her, choosing a healthy, happy mate, is completely different than full-on gene editing. I would go as far as saying that gene editing is one of the most absolute dangerous things that we can get into. It is going to, maybe not at first, but it will over time fundamentally change humanity for the worst, to the point that we no longer become humans. And I think not only should we shut this down, that if anybody creates a gene edited person in a lab, that we should kill it. because what's going to happen is this genetically altered person is going to become what is called the revolutionary phenotype, and it is going to establish a new race of humanity. And it might not sound like it will at first, because let's say you edit out something like you edit cancer out, or you edit people that get migraines out, or you edit out COVID, right? You edit out these things. That you enter into the idea of, well, gene editing is okay now. From there, you're going to go into designer babies, right? You're going to get people, well, if I can edit out cancer and I can edit out addiction and I can edit out headaches, well, why can't I edit a baby to have blue eyes and to be things like that? Well, okay. And then where does it go from there? It's going to keep going and going and going until the process of organic selection, i.e. reproduction, which is a holy thing. By the way, our faith does explicitly talk about the conception of a child through a woman as a holy act. This is something that cannot be gotten away from. And if you get into gene editing, you will get away from that. And you will eventually get into what we're seeing now with farm animals. In our lifetimes, we will start to see farm animals their genetics are assembled via some cloud somewhere, and they're grown in synthetic wombs, synthetic polymer sacs. We're already seeing that. It's only a matter of time before they push humanity into that. And when we get to that point, it is irreversible. We can't go back. And then we have effectively made a mockery of the form that the gods have given us.
So I would agree with you that any form of reproduction that doesn't fundamentally start with the sexual union of a man and a woman to produce a child is incredibly forbidden. Like, you can't just have test tube babies. I refuse to recognize these people as even people. Like, they're like flesh golems at that point. So to get that aside, that's definitely forbidden. But as you had said before, one of the limits here is things like manipulate your kid to have blue eyes and to be 6'5 and to be athletic and strong and tough, right? I don't see there's any issue with that, so long as the actual basis of the child was formed organically between two people. I think it's okay to edit their genes in a way that improves them in that sense. And to say that it would inevitably go further, I do agree that this would probably be the case. That's simply the nature of technology and science. There's nothing we can really do about that except to say that it's forbidden and we refuse to do this. I mean, that's basically the response to it, is anything that becomes forbidden is, of course, forbidden. You're not allowed to do it. But before that point, everything is acceptable.
But would you say that it is appropriate to prevent earlier measures so it doesn't get into forbidden territory?
What do you mean by that?
Like, say, well, X is going to lead to Y, so we got to ban X.
I do think that's fundamentally acceptable, though I don't think we can make the religious argument that doing so is that doing X is forbidden, and that's why you can't do it.
Okay, so do you believe that our genes are from the gods?
In a materialistic sense, no. I think that there is a part of the soul, the hamer, which comes from the gods and which is a metaphysical essence, a soul. But this is different and distinct from the base mundane material of human DNA.
But do you believe that the human form, the material human form, is a reflection of the metaphysical form?
In a way, yes. For instance, I would think that it's totally unacceptable to change humans to look like octopi or something.
So if we are, our physical forms are a reflection of our spiritual forms, and both are gifts from the gods, and you staunchly disagree, which I also staunchly disagree with, that fundamentally doing anything to change the nature of the human soul is just, like, ridiculous. Wouldn't you also argue that the aspects of the human form are reflections of that spiritual form which come from the gods?
In a certain sense, yes, I would agree with this logic.
So you would agree with me that editing a human's genes is I wouldn't even say indirectly, is sort of directly altering our spiritual form as well.
No, I don't think that that necessarily has a two-way street. And I mean, we could use a different example here to showcase how why this is different. The metaphysical component of the hover is different from the mundane base form of human, like DNA or your physical gross body. For instance, our ancestors gave themselves piercings. They tattooed themselves. They manipulated their skin through artificial scarring. They grew. All right, am I back now?
Yeah, you're back now.
All right, so humans drilled holes and grooves within their teeth and filled it with precious metals and gemstones. These are all things that we've archaeologically found as occurring within Viking Age or continental Germanic peoples.
So, real quick, would you consider any of those things to go on to be inheritable? Or are those just all superficial kind of augmentations?
Sure, they're not heritable.
Would you say that there is a meaningful distinction between inheritable augmentations and superficial augmentations?
No, I don't think there is.
Why?
Well, because we can also say that our ancestors deliberately changed their genes in a heritable fashion by, for instance, epigenetic methods. People who, for instance, saw warfare and did hunting and running and exposed themselves to all these sorts of activities, this naturally actually affects your genes. It's not just a simple matter of one gene making you better at being athletic. Genes activate and are manipulated by things that they do in an environmental sense, in a Lamarckian sense even. They can be manipulated by even atrocities that occur to people, traumas and that sort of thing.
But then we gotta go back to
People are constantly manipulating their genetics in a much smaller, less precise format that they don't necessarily have control or particular control or understanding of. Developing this understanding and this control is not necessarily distinct from that. It just improves the way we've already been doing things.
But would you say that there is a fundamental philosophical difference between having the aim of doing something, like as we mentioned before, immortality, or what we're talking about now, and doing it effectively by accident?
In the strict sense that one could be doing something strictly by accident, I suppose that could be distinct from deciding to do something, but it should be noted here that our ancestors did have basic understandings of breeding and heritability. Like, they were specifically trying to imbue their descendants with good traits.
But you agreed with me before when I said that there was a difference between organic natural selection or organic eugenics and purposeful designed artificial genetic modification.
I do not think that's true. I don't think there's a particular difference between this, and the latter is just a more precise and efficient method of doing the former.
I think they are drastically different because... mostly because of the intent behind them. Let's take a step back from humans then. Yeah, you're absolutely right that your epigenetic code, certain genes will dial up depending on environment, so on and so forth, things like traumas and, you know, all this kind of stuff. This even occurs with animals. Animals will begin to change if they are sent to a different location. We'll see certain animals... Like, for example, fish. After so many generations, fish are really good to observe with this because we get to see genetic divergence happen so quickly because their lifespans are so short. They have so many kids, so on and so forth. When fish move to colder waters or warmer waters, their bodies will change. So we see this, right? But would you say that there is a fundamental difference between that, which is what our ancestors did? Our ancestors weren't thinking, all right, well, if we kick ass in battle and we do all this kind of stuff, this will make us superior genetically superior? They were just, you know, or were they, you know, going along with their culture, evolving with their environment, evolving with the circumstances?
I don't think that our ancestors had the idea of genes in that strictly determined sense, in that if I'm really great in battle, then my kids will inherit superior genes. But they did believe that if they were good in battle and they had fought the battle for many generations, that their children would also inherit a superior ability in battle. They didn't quite understand the mechanism of what's going on here, but their intent to do so was more or less the same.
All right. So I think we pretty much hashed that one out pretty good. What do we got up next? Because we're running out of time here.
Another quick one, then. Would you two, in that case, consider body modification as a form of transhumanism? Such as something like tattoos, piercings, ritual scarification,
no.
filing down of teeth, and so forth.
No.
I do fundamentally consider it transhumanism.
Okay, so do I consider it a form of transhumanism? Depends. Depends. Does it go against our faith? The answer is no. That's why I was saying no. But do I consider it a form of transhumanism? It depends on the definition of transhumanism. My definition is no, it doesn't. Tattoos, piercings, scarification are superficial things that are not inheritable, that do not profoundly change the nature and the form of man and push him into the next stage of evolution. So no, I wouldn't consider those transhumanism.
What about you then, Tristan? Do you have any response to that one?
So I would take the position that it is in fact transhumanism on the basis that it's a deliberate artificial change and improvement upon the human condition through artificial means.
So that's clear and concise enough. So would in this case, transhumanism, by your own definitions then, would it jeopardize the inherent nature and value of one's soul? We're back to the faith question now.
I do think it definitely does have the potential to do so. There are limits to transhumanism and what is theologically acceptable, and bypassing those limits are forbidden and would in fact imperil effectively your soul or your standing amongst the gods in some sense.
I guess in some ways, like to rephrase the question, is with transhumanism, is it possible only to cause detrimental effects to your soul, or can you bring it higher? Can you bring it further up than you otherwise normally would?
I don't think it's possible to apotheosize yourself into like a god or a spirit through artificial means. At least through mundane scientific means. The gods might be able to do this themselves, but it's not something that humans, as we understand it right now, have any sort of capability or access to do.
What about you, Dave?
I agree with Tristan, actually, on this. Would it fundamentally change the nature of the soul, and would it hurt you in the afterlife? I actually would go a step further, and I say it might already have. We might have already crossed the threshold.
Can you elaborate on that?
That all of the things that we have created in technocratic society, in modern society, that have, you know, as we mentioned before, have already fundamentally changed us epigenetically, possibly permanently genetically, could have already damaged us spiritually.
Okay. Tristan, do you have any response to that one?
I generally accept the idea that it's theoretically possible that this could happen, but I can't think of anything that a normal person in modern society would encounter that it would do this. I mean, maybe, Dave, do you have like a suggestion of something that might be doing this?
So, no, I don't. I don't, and I'm not saying it did. I'm just saying it's possible that it has already
right.
happened.
I would agree that it is theoretically possible, but I can't say that something specifically has done that.
Okay, we can move on to the next question then. If we then say, in the terms of something like a really radical change in a transhumanist sense, either a mechanical or a biological radical alteration, are there ever exceptions and excuses to this, such as a family member or someone like close to you that has fallen severely ill or been subject to a horrible accident and requires extensive recreation of their body, essentially. Are there exceptions to your own definitions and rules to when transhumanism should be considered?
Well, Dave, why don't you take this one?
This is a tough question because it depends what you mean, right? Are we talking again about maybe a pacemaker, or are we talking about organ transplants or facial reconstructive surgery? You know, that happens all the time. People, you know, fall off mountains or get in motorcycle accidents and have to have their whole freaking head put back together.
Let's use two examples then.
What's that?
We can use two examples then. Is a pacemaker allowed?
I mean, it's already there. I don't think that a pacemaker fundamentally changes the form of man, right? Most of the time, you get a pacemaker, you're already old in age, you're past your breeding period. So this isn't really a trait that you're going to be passing on. Now, if babies start being born and we automatically put pacemakers in them to make their heart stronger, and then over time this changes our genetics, yes, I believe that would be problematic. However, just like giving somebody a pacemaker, I don't think is a problem, and I don't consider it transhumanism.
How about reconstructing most, if not all, of the internal organs except, say, the brain in order to preserve the person that has been subject to this theoretical accident?
I would still file this under prosthesis or perhaps I don't believe that repairing something that is damaged is transhumanism.
How about if you grow the body from scratch, from a template, from your own genetic template, and you just move the brain from the damaged body over to the new, fresh body?
Oh, man, this is... I would take the position that this starts getting into problematic territory. I think if your body is so damaged that you require a whole brain transplant, then perhaps that it's your time to go.
Right. I would agree mostly with Dave here and say that any sort of repair or prosthesis of the body is perfectly acceptable. The only forbidden things are to replace a perfectly fine working body with like a mechanical construct. Or in the sense that one of your examples here was like growing a body and then transferring your brain to it. I think that is forbidden because the secondary body, there's no mode of continuity between your body and that body. It's just a straight up replacement. It ceases to be your body at that point, and you're effectively inhabiting a flesh golem.
I would agree with this.
Okay, then final question in that case. That if you could, shouldn't you theoretically be able to create a more robust, healthy, and strong community of heathens with the aid of transhumanism if said technology was only available or limited to this group of people, or allowing you to serve the religion and the gods further, that you should or should not take this opportunity that arises in order, in this case, specifically mentioning, for instance, the Jarl caste, if they should not be made as close to perfect as possible physically in order to reflect their spirituality. Tristan, do you have anything to say on that?
Yeah, I'll say that some level of transhumanist adaptation and improvement is in fact going to be necessary in the future for our faith. And that's just a strict basic reality that other peoples in the world are going to do this, and if we don't have some method of competition to improve ourselves in that way, that we're effectively just going to be eliminated by like a squadron of transhumanist Chinese soldiers or something. Though, as I've said, there are limits and forbidden things that, regardless of the consequences, we simply cannot go past.
How about you, Dave?
So, if we're just talking like eugenics, I don't consider eugenics to be transhumanism. To just like breed a healthy, robust Jarl caste, even if it's intentional, even if it's like a breeding program, I still wouldn't put this into transhumanism, because these children and these people that are bred in this fashion will indeed still be bound by the man's form, right? They're not going to be 400 IQ. They're not going to be 6'10". They're not going to be, they're still going to be bound by what came before. Having an organic continuity between lineage and genetic line, I believe, is something that is sacred, right? That is something that goes back to Rig, that goes back to, the gods themselves, and and that goes back to our kings, our ancient kings. So to, really get in and fundamentally monkey it with that and change it, I think is the problem. So what Tristan was describing, if he was describing this, if I understood him correctly, that intentionally breeding a well-bred Jarl caste, I do not consider transhumanism. But I think if we create as I mentioned before, a bunch of test tube babies that are superhumans, I think that's a problem. Now, I'm about to say something kind of spicy here, in that I do believe that what is going to be even more necessary than breeding a Jarl cast is going to be dysgenically breeding a Thrall cast. This is going to be spicy. I do believe that many of our folk that are effectively our enemies at this point, there's going to be a time that we need to take these people, breed them with very lowly bred women, and keep breeding them until they effectively are bred, their traitor genes and their traitorous nature is bred out of them entirely, and as punishment, they're for the next many generations, for the foreseeable future, they are thralls.
Yeah, I don't actually have anything against dysgenically breeding a thrall cast, but I don't think it's necessary, because the nature of a thrall and what makes them thralls is contained spiritually within them and not genetically.
Yeah, well, I would say that these people that are of traitorous nature, they are thralls. I would say they're already thralls, and I think that they just need to be pushed into thraldom.
I wouldn't say that traitors and whatnot are necessarily thralls. I also think that it's very possible they're just spiritually corrupted, like they're nithings, effectively. Like, there's a distinction between a thrall and a nithing. There's a very large distinction. A thrall is fundamentally someone who is occupying the status that they were given by the gods. This is a perfectly pure, ordained function, and they shouldn't be degraded in the same way as to associate them with nithings and those who are actually spiritually corrupted by the trolls and Jotnar and whatnot.
Okay, yeah, I would come around to that. I would agree with that. But I do think that dysgenically breeding, dysgenics is going to be required to establish a thrall caste.
Well, I guess before we go into that even further, that was the last question I had. So I'm wondering, do you, Dave, or Tristan have any final closing thoughts on this?
Tristan?
I do think our biggest issue here mostly comes down to the definition of what exactly is transhumanism, which is a little tough to get around in the span of a 1 hour discussion between ourselves. But, I don't think it's insurmountable in that sense.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Pretty much all of our points of contention during this discussion effectively come down to we have a little bit of a different definition of transhumanism. And as I said in the opening statement, Tristan's definition of transhumanism isn't necessarily wrong. It's just here's the problem with transhumanism is that we don't have it yet. So we don't really know what it is. It's mostly conceptual at this point. So to say that transhumanism is anything from the first ape man sharpening a stick to the contact lenses to prosthesis, or my definition, which I stand by, which is anything that profoundly changes the form, transforms man, and pushes him into the next evolutionary genetic divergence into something that is different, right? homo, whatever it's going to be.
Yeah, honestly, a massive problem with transhumanism in general is the fact that everybody has their own definition of it. As you kind of mentioned, there are some radicals out there that consider basically anything from a pacemaker to a sharpening of a stick to a tattoo to be considered transhumanist by its very raw definition of, you know, the word this episode. And I don't think we should, because that's like 3 hours on its own.
Yeah.
Yeah, we can do another episode on like digital creations and constructs and that sort of thing.
Yeah. And then there's on the far end of the spectrum, you have guys that like call themselves biohackers and like shoot themselves up with they use CRISPR out of like their garage and shoot themselves up with the gene editing stuff. And I take the position that these people should be like arrested. You know, I mean, it should not be allowed to let everybody just kind of willy-nilly edit themselves. That's craziness.
I would agree that in a political sense, we should forbid people from just, like, random people from just editing their own genes. That's incredibly dangerous. But, like I said, I don't think that this is necessarily forbidden within the faith itself.
All right. So, all right. Good talk. Excellent discussion, Mr. Tristan. Excellent questions that Mr. Andre came up with. This topic is not dead. This is a topic that we as heathens are going to be discussing for the foreseeable future, forever and ever. And I actually, and I know Tristan, me and Tristan actually agree strongly with this, that it is, we have an imperative as people of faith to bring discussions of faith into modern and even futurist topics, because we're going to need to know how to deal with it. I believe that there was a discussion on how to be heathen in space one time. I think that it's important to have these discussions.
Yeah, I very much agree with that.
Yeah. All right, cool. Good talk, fellas. That is our time. Perfectly fit within an hour. So we are going to shut it down for this evening, everybody. Thank you so much, everybody, for tuning in. If you have any sort of anything to add, please leave it in the comments. I'll bring it up, and then maybe we'll talk about it, because we're probably going to do another show on this at some point in the future. So if you had anything to add, you have any sort of ideas, or maybe you're somebody that's very, very well-read in transhumanism and would like to come on and talk with me interested about this, you know, drop something in the comments, let us know, reach out to us on Telegram, and I'll talk to you guys next week.
I would like to... Go ahead. Hold on, Dave. I would like to advertise our next episode is going to be a... interview with Neil John about the coming industrial collapse and peak oil.
That's going to be a good one. That's going to be a good one. I can't wait to have Mr. Neil John back on. But, so everybody tune in next week. We got Mr. Neil John coming on. And then this Sunday coming up, I will be appearing on Hearth of Europa to talk about the Bizarrechives in Pulp Fiction. That's going to be happening on their channel over there. I believe at 2 p.m. Eastern this Sunday. So everybody tune in over there. Go subscribe over there. But like always, if you guys support the Bog, you want to see the Bog keep going, you want to help us keep the lights on, help me get a new computer so we can get over all this technical problem, make sure you go to patreon.com/thebog and sign up. There's a tier for everybody, $5, all the way up to $50. You get a sticker, you get a mug, but most importantly, you get RSS feed to listen to the audio of every single show that we do in your car, on your commutes, at the gym, or at work. That is patreon.com/thebog. If you want to support us another way, make sure you go to shop.spreadshirt.com/bogshop. Get yourself some sweet Bog merch. Get yourself a hoodie, get yourself a beanie for the holidays, for the winter season coming up. And then Mr. Neil John, if you like Mr. Neil John, you want to go check out what Mr. Neil John does for a living, go over to facebook.com/ironagejodish and get yourself some authentic Vedic astrology. The stuff is very, very cool. Everybody loves it. If you decide to get a reading, make sure to tell them that Big Dave sent you over at facebook.com/ironagejodish. Make sure to get yourself a copy of the Bizarrechives, Weird Tales of Monsters, Magic, and Machines. If you love Tolkien, you love Robert E. Howard, you love H.P. Lovecraft, you love science fiction, you love all that kind of stuff, the compilation of short stories in those genres written by aspiring amateur authors from across the world, it is on thebizarrechives.com. Get yourself a copy over at Amazon or on Books A Million before issue 2 comes out very, very soon. I'm going to raise a horn to our most exalted patrons, our very own Mr. Andre, and our good buddy, Mr. Corey. Hail to both of you, and hail to all of the Bog Lords out there and Bog Maidens. And I'll see you guys next week, 6 p.m. Eastern, Friday, here on Dave Martell YouTube channel. I'll see you guys next time. Many hails, many blessings.